Hello and welcome to another edition of The Trapdoor with me, Sophie Black. My guest this week is Fergus Craig, the actor, comedian and writer who has been in a lot of things, including Star Stories, Sorry I've Got No Head, Extras. He was in Extras. He was in, most recently he was in something called Hoff the Record, which was an improvised sitcom centred around The Hoff, which is actually incredibly funny if you've not seen it. It was on Dave. He's also the person behind the Tips for Actors Twitter handle, a very funny sort of piss take of a pompous acting coach. Myself and Fergus also developed that character for to make a sitcom over a number of years, and it never got made. But you may have seen bits and pieces we did for the BBC, some online sketches, and a sort of pilot. You know what? Look it up, because it's really funny and one of the greatest things that never got made. Anyway, Fergus is one of the most talented people I know, and he's also a father, which meant he qualified for this podcast. So he came in to see me a couple of weeks ago and started off by laying down the ground rules.
Yeah. Before we start, is it okay if I don't talk about my family?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine.
All I'm prepared to do is talk about the book.
So, paint me a picture of what your life was like immediately preceding Louis's birth.
Basically, myself and Laurie have been together for a long time, and she's got a full-time job, 5 days a week, quite long hours. And I've been like a freelance actor, writer-type person for like 12 or 13 years or something. Like, I haven't had a real job. So I've had the house to myself every day for a long time.
Yeah.
So I would work during the day. I would always write, generally. And then I would quite like to go... I really like sitting in pubs on my own at, like, about 6 in the evening and having one or two drinks and reading.
Can I just say, I don't want to interrupt your flow.
No, yeah.
But, I mean, I am interrupting your flow.
It's fine.
That is probably the number one thing I miss about since I've had children. Because we used to do that quite a lot, where you just go... I mean, obviously...
We used to sit on our own in pubs, opposite sides of
the road.
Yeah.
I'd sit in the nice one, the sort of smart gastropub, and you'd sit in the really smelly, horrible old...
Well, we're from different backgrounds, aren't
we? Yeah, so there you go. No, but I miss that, because we used to do that a bit, where you'd say, oh, do you want to just go for a pint? And you just go sort of spontaneously for a pint.
Yeah.
And then just have a pint and then some peanuts and say hi and then just go home. Like, you didn't have to get... You weren't going out and getting pissed or...
No.
You know, it was just a kind of nice local thing
to do. I don't miss
do.
Getting drunk.
No. But I miss that. I miss the spontaneity of it and the kind of like... And especially if you are working on your own at home, it was a really nice point to kind of sort of, you know, mark the end of your day or kind of just see someone. Or I really miss that.
Well, me and Laurie would go out to eat like 3 or 4 nights a week.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot. And I would quite often have, I'll quite often have auditions or whatever in the afternoon. So say, for example, we're recording this at like 4:30.
Yeah.
I don't know when we'll finish.
Yeah.
But
probably about, probably 8, about 39-ish.
10. I've got a lot of stuff I want to say.
I've brought a sleeping bag, so.
But normally, back in the day,
yeah.
After this, I would let Laurie know I was in town, yeah. And I'd wait for her to finish work. I would go for a pint on my own, read Private Eye.
Can I just say, this go for a pint on my own often was go for a pint with me. I'm just saying, you're erasing my existence. Because I work around the corner from here, so often you would go, do you want? I've got to kill an hour before I meet Laurie. Do you want to meet for a pint? And I go, okay.
Yeah,
but... do that. Anyway, it's not about me, but I'm just saying.
It really isn't. And, yeah, we would do that from time to time.
Yeah.
But, like, without wishing to make myself sound like an alcoholic, this was,
this every day.
I did this most days.
You just sit in pubs on your own waiting for your partner
yeah.
to finish work.
Yeah. Oh, no, I would go to my local pub most days at about 6 and have one or two drinks.
Yeah.
And read. Or then I would meet Laurie in town after work.
So you were spending your time in pubs, waiting around.
No, I was spending a lot of time at home writing. But like that was a nice thing that I got to do at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And...
can I just stress, yes. I'm not dependent on alcohol.
I'm going to edit that bit out.
Okay.
So you were... you were having a nice time, going out for dinners, going to pubs, you know, quite sort of maybe quite solitary, but in a nice way.
Yeah, but there were, like, negatives to that as well.
What were the negatives?
I've been alone for 10 years. Like, it's true. That was a...
yeah.
That was a...
that was a downside.
That was a regular theme. I'm on my own all the time.
And what made you want to have kids?
I've always wanted to have kids. I always thought I'd be a good dad. I've always quite liked kids. I've always tended to get on with them. So I always wanted to be a dad, I suppose.
What was the birth like and how did that happen?
When a mummy and daddy fall in love. Laurie, it was a reasonably difficult pregnancy in the sense that... fairly at the first scan, we found out that Laurie had a fibroid, which is, I'm going to say like medical terms, but not really, they're going to be wrong.
Right. So just say them confidently.
So I recommend Googling this stuff. But she had like a fibroid, which I guess is like a benign tumour. It's like a
growth.
It's a growth. It's something in the way.
Yeah.
So, and it was in the way. So very early on, we knew that she wasn't going to have a natural birth. So we knew that she was going to have a cesarean. And then a couple of months before the due date, we had a scan. We were having extra scans because of the complications. But we had a scan where they were worried about his growth. Like he was pretty small for what? He was supposed to be at that stage, and they were worried that Laurie had high blood pressure as well, and they were very worried about her getting preeclampsia. So at one stage, very early, like it would have been 6 or 7 weeks before the due date, they were talking like we're going to have to do it like they were talking as if we were going to do it like that day, and then it was like the next week. So.
And how did that feel? What was going through your head at that point?
I was very worried for Laurie because it was very stressful for her, and I was very worried about the baby as well. So I was just very stressed by it all, but. Felt like out of the three of us, I'm the one who needs to have his shit together. So but I was very stressed about it, yeah, and worried about what might happen. So that, yeah, he ended up being 4 weeks premature. It was when we actually had the cesarean. And Laurie was in hospital for about 3 days before the operation. And he was born to... So it's actually really weird talking about it. Actually going through it, really, it is genuinely quite emotional. So he was... the way they do it is they have a certain amount of cesareans booked in for that day, but you don't know what time yours is going to be. So they say, come in at... Well, Laurie was already there, but like come in at like 7 a.m. and it's going to happen on this day. It will happen, but you don't know when it's going to happen.
Gosh, how strange.
Yeah. So obviously, I mean, I've always been an insomniac, so obviously I didn't sleep the night before. And then there was one cesarean before us, and then he ended up being born like just before 11, and we were in there, and you know, like I have a really weak bladder, right? So we ended up in the operating theatre, and they're just about to do it, but they're sorting all their shit out. And I was like, can I go to the toilet? And then they had like the radio on. They were lovely. And then
and how many people are in the room?
I don't know. It felt like 8.
Oh, right, okay.
6, 7,
so it's
8.
Like a proper operating theatre. Lots of people and... Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they were all women, actually.
And did they prepare you...
Except for the anaesthetist.
And did they prepare you at all for what was going to happen after he... Was there anything sort of...
Yeah. You get like a debrief. So the idea is, and it did happen this way, that they have to sew the mum back up.
Yeah.
So they hand the dad the baby, and then once you've sort of weighed him and cut the cord and introduced him to the mum, you're ushered out with the baby.
Right.
So I sat with Louis for, like, I think it was like half an hour or something, 40
Gosh.
Minutes. I sat there, just me and him in a room.
And what was that like?
Oh, shit. No, it was actually... I'm very, like, above myself, like, analysing how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
At every moment. So, like, it's, like, it's one of those moments that you know, like, will be one of the biggest moments of your life, or is at least supposed to be.
Yeah.
So I'm always analysing, thinking, oh, will I...
Yeah, what will I be like in this situation?
What will I be like in this... And I was, like, pre-aware that I would be very analytical of the way I was feeling in that moment. And it's like, you are... The rules are that it has to be the best moment of your life, or otherwise you're a cunt.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
So, but...
I felt that too, actually.
What did you?
I remember feeling... Yeah, like really conscious. So like almost so conscious of it as a happening that I almost didn't let myself actually feel it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And it's different for you, because for me, it's like pure, it's purely an emotional thing. Like for the dad, it's purely an emotional thing and like some broader sense of responsibility or whatever.
Yeah.
But obviously for the mum, it's also like there's a major physical thing happening.
Yeah.
So, it was, you know, it did sort of, I sort of go, I recognise this feeling. And it was a bit like being on an E. Like,
yep.
Which I've only done a couple of times in my life, actually.
Yeah.
But it was a bit, you know, there was definitely serotonin floating around.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the basics on the birth.
Hello.
Is it a microphone?
How did life change after that?
Well, the week that we had a mental week after that, because Laurie had a, like, caesareans, as I'm sure you know, are like the recovery from them is very painful, mm-hmm. and you're not very mobile. Mm-hmm. But Laurie had what is called a classic caesarean, because they had to do a bit of maneuvering to reach the baby without getting the fibroid or causing, you know, shenanigans in there.
Yeah.
So a traditional caesarean nowadays, a normal caesarean, they just cut one way.
Yeah.
But with Laurie, they did the classic, which is the way they apparently used to do it. Just they cut one way and then the other way. Ooh. So it's like a big cross. So they gave her loads of drugs, and the first 24 hours, I don't think they like stressed enough with her. You're on a lot of drugs now.
Yeah. And when they
stop, this is gonna hurt.
Yeah. Right.
So on the, like, she was getting up and down and lifting him out of his cot and stuff in the hospital. So then by like the second or third day after it, she was like in serious, serious pain and unable to move. And then about 2.5 days after he was born, we thought we were just about to go home, and they did checks on him, and he was a bit yellow and floppy, and we just didn't really notice because they said new babies sleep a lot. And then they took him upstairs to the neonatal unit, and it turned out he had a thing called polycythemia, which I don't like. Oh, basically, it's a situation as opposed to a condition. It's something that happens in like very early on with newborns, and they have to handle it. And then once they've handled it, it's over. Right. It's done. It'll never come back.
Yeah.
So I didn't learn any information about it. Yeah. I just knew that he was ill.
Yeah.
So that the neonatal, I've since discovered that this is like really common, and obviously, like, I see friends of mine have much more scary births, mm-hmm. but like the neonatal unit is like a really weird place.
Yeah.
There are like really, really tiny babies in there.
Yeah.
Like, he was really small, but there are really tiny babies in there.
Yeah.
And there are some really, really, like, haunted-looking parents.
Yeah.
And then the all the doctors and nurses are the happiest people you could meet, because they've like learnt this way of dealing it, with it. So so we went out there, and they're like, congratulations, and we're like, Laurie's in a lot of pain, and we're terrified that our baby's gonna die or something or I am anyway.
Yeah.
And for as nice as they were, a couple of the doctors were quite
Officious
is a great word for it. So there was this Irish doctor who was like, she was like, so we've had a check on the PCTs, and we've been set up there for an update. So we've had a check on the PCTs, and he was 9. So obviously that's not, like, she's just throwing abbreviations at me and numbers, and I haven't slept for 3 days, and I don't know what the fuck. I have never heard of any of this stuff. I don't know what you're talking about. So.
And did you have to stop her and say,
I don't know what the fuck? Yeah, but I can't, like, learn it all.
No.
I just want the basics of like,
is he going to be okay?
Yeah. And obviously they can't say that, but I just want gradations of like,
what's the next step? What do we have to expect? What do we hope from this next test? Et cetera.
So, I was up and down between the neonatal and where Laurie was, cause she couldn't move. And then, so I remember going home on, I don't know, one of the nights when he was in like intensive care, or there's the other level that's just below that, special care. Mm-hmm. And it was, the whole thing was, he wasn't putting on any weight. And I didn't realize you have to feed newborns like every 2 hours and you have to, I didn't realize that because we never had the chance to do
NCT
and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like, he was born 5 pounds. And obviously he lost weight after he was born because that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't gaining any at all. And it seemed really important.
Yeah.
Like really important, like more so than normal.
Yeah.
And it was very, I don't know what it was like. Well, you were going through like the whole breastfeeding thing.
Yeah.
Which was like.
But it was different because Zach was a bigger baby.
Right.
So even though he lost weight when he was born and then we had to be hospitalized because he did, blah, blah, blah. But there was always that, you know, because Louis was born at 5 pounds, you didn't have much room to maneuver. You know, he couldn't afford to lose loads of weight.
So it was literally like, we will give him. So there was no like, they're like, try breastfeeding, but here's some formula.
Yeah,
give him this formula.
You have to give him this, yeah.
And it was like, we're going to start with, I think it was like 20 mils.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, and they were like talking about just try and give him 18 mils or 24 mils. It was like so specific, but he wasn't eating it.
Yeah.
He like, because you wouldn't stay awake.
Yeah.
So then he ended up in intensive care and I couldn't sleep because you've just got that chair in the hospital.
Yeah.
And I hadn't slept for 3 days and I felt like selfish about that, but I had to like function.
Yeah.
So then I went home and closed the door and I hadn't cried in like 10 years or something. And I like cried like wailing. And I saw my neighbour as I walked in the house. So I was there ever since, I've seen my neighbour since then. He knows that happened.
Yeah.
So then I had to call like Laurie's family and tell her everything. And Laurie's sister was very good with me, actually, in the sense that I think Laurie had mentioned that I'd cried.
Yeah.
And because I'd cried at hospital a couple of times as well, because I wasn't handling it. And she was like, you need to pull yourself together. You can't be crying. You can't be walking around crying. You need to be the one who's together now. Because Laurie can't have you crying.
Wow.
And that was like, I don't think that was a message from Laurie. Can you tell Fergus? No. But it was quite good.
Yeah.
It was quite appropriate. There's like one thing about being in touch with your feelings, and I think it was totally legit to be very emotional at that time.
Yeah.
But also, I actually really did need to get my shit together.
Right, yeah.
Because I was having a nervous breakdown at that moment.
And did you, I mean, I think there's something in that, definitely, that you, at that point, in that critical time, you, as you sort of mentioned before, you were the person in a position to be able to handle this better than, say, Laurie and obviously Louis. So, but did you get an opportunity after then to kind of take stock and...
To be honest, I could easily talk about it like I got like post-traumatic stress from that whole situation or whatever, but I genuinely think once he was home and he was okay and Laurie was gradually okay, that was fine. I hardly ever thought about it again.
Yeah.
It was like totally fine.
Yeah.
I remember calling Laurie's dad from the hospital to tell him all the update on everything. It was like a 10-minute phone call explaining like that Louis was in intensive care and what the prognosis was on that and what he had and how Laurie was doing, and she wasn't very mobile, and they were checking her blood pressure, but everything seemed okay. But it was all very, very serious at that time, and there were lots of bad things that could happen to Louis and Laurie. And he was like very quiet and yeah, listening. But in the background was like this really loud noise the whole time. And then at the end he said, oh, sorry, by the way, I'm in the cinema. We're watching Captain Underpants. So it was like he had taken his grandkids. And Laurie's American, by the way, so they're in the States. Mm-hmm. And he had taken his grandkids to the cinema to watch Captain Underpants and just sat there in the cinema.
Picked up the phone to you.
I mean, understandable that he would pick up the phone yeah. with what was going on.
Yeah.
But he was just in the cinema.
Open the front door and I can go out.
And now, how do you... Now you are... Louis is...
He's like 15 and a half months. Like, yeah.
I mean, obviously, everything's changed. How has your relationship with Laurie evolved through parenthood?
We've broken up. No. Here's the thing about me and Laurie. We were together... I've been with Laurie since I was 23. We had Louis when I was 37. So we've been together a lot, and I've lived with her since I was 24. So we've been together for a long time without a baby.
Yeah.
So it's not like he came in and interrupted the
love fest.
The love fest.
Yeah.
And I mean that not in a
no, I know what you
negative
mean.
Way at all, but we've sort of like been through a lot of stages in our relationship already, probably.
Yeah. You've been tested in different ways.
Yeah. He interrupted the routine, but it's been nice, I think.
Yeah.
So, not to like blow our own horns or anything, but I think we had... Because we've been together for so long and had no reason to stay together other than we wanted to.
Yeah.
We had developed quite good techniques for dealing with each other at our worst.
Yeah, right.
So, and because it might have been different if, like, most dads, 2 weeks after he was born,
yeah,
I fucked off.
Yeah.
So that might have been different.
You go back to work.
Yeah.
As opposed to...
Yes, yeah.
Most dads.
Sorry, I mean, from most dads from my neck of the woods, you know, in the ghetto. Here on the White Middle Class People Complain About Their Children podcast, I... sorry, is that really annoying?
No, it's fine. I'll make a jingle.
Yeah.
White middle class people moaning about... their children. My widow class.
We were very fortunate in the sense that we could afford to both be there. Both, we had a maternity and paternity leave.
Yeah.
And one baby who, once we left hospital, was healthy and a relatively easy to look after baby.
Yeah. I think my brother has a theory that, and it's not a particularly groundbreaking theory, but that you get out what you put in. So actually, if you are, he sort of feels like he was quite a hands-on dad with his kids, and therefore he cares about them on a level that perhaps he wouldn't had he not been changing their nappies and waking up in the night to feed them and blah, blah. It kind of strengthens your bond. And I wonder if you feel... I mean, I guess you've got nothing to compare it with, but...
I feel very close to Louis. I don't think that's a, like, unique thing, but I do feel very close to him because I have done a lot of his care. And Laurie went back to work, and it took a long time to get him into a nursery, so I did a lot of his care for a while. And so I do feel very, very close to him in that respect. But I do also want to say, because I'm very aware of all this sort of stuff, like how lucky that is. And one thing that really irritates me when people talk about, like, I just wanted to be there for my child because that's important to me. And, like, people have to make money.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think people often forget.
Yeah.
Like, people do have to make money to pay for the child.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't think anyone should feel guilty about that.
No, of course. But then you're... I mean, I guess the balance is always, am I doing this because we can't survive without me doing this job? Or am I doing this because I kind of, like, there's nothing else going... You know, there's a point at which you kind of balance the cost of, you know, if you've got two parents working full-time and you're not having much downtime with your child, then it's understandable that someone might question that or kind of go, hang on, could we survive on less money or, you know, whatever?
Maybe, but is that more for the parent or the child?
Oh.
Sometimes I think it's more for the parent.
That's true. Own, yeah.
Like, lack of guilt and the, like, fun that they get from being with their child. Not that children don't like spending time with their parents. But all of this, I don't know. I don't know any of this. No, I've got no idea.
Good point.
But a few years ago, I read a book called... I think it was in that Freakonomics book that everyone was reading a few years ago. Did you read that?
I didn't, but
there's a bit in that book. The idea is it like sort of breaks some preconceived ideas with data, right?
Yeah.
So it makes the case of, like, it's not just about children, but, like, why children with certain names get on better than others, right. And what is the actual data on that, and why is that? But one of the really good things in it was basically, up until the age of 5, nothing you do
will make any difference.
Will make any difference to your child, like, as beyond keeping them alive and not, like, abusing them. Nothing. The only thing, the best thing that you can give your child is your genes.
Wow.
So, like,
that's wonderful. I'm going to remember that.
So it was like things like people were thinking, like, there's all these studies on, like, children with more books in the house do better academically. And that's because, you know, from a very young age, they're read books and they get them reading early and all of this.
Yeah.
So, but children with more books in the house tend to have smarter parents. So they've been given those genes.
So genetically, they're more likely to be into that.
Apparently... This is all arbitrary, and I might have remembered it wrong, so don't take it as a... But apparently, after the age of 5, there's, like, shitloads of difference you can make.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But, like, when they're little, you just sort of have to keep them alive, apparently.
That's really interesting. I mean, I definitely think... I sometimes do crazy things, like... You know, like, I was contemplating, we're going to finish here in a bit, and I was contemplating going home, seeing my kids, putting them to bed, and then I've got to go out again to see a show that my husband's doing. So that would be a case of literally being home for sort of an hour, having a crazy kind of, like, having to kind of deal with me coming back, great, and then bedtime, I don't want to go to bed, you know, and this kind of roller coaster of emotions that actually isn't the best thing for them, but I want to see them.
Right, yeah.
So that's a very good example of me going, it's probably better, I do have to go back and see my kids before they, you know, I've got to see them before they go to sleep. And it's like, well, yeah, I would like to, but I think that's probably only serving me. But constantly making that, trying to make that call all the time, really. What's been the impact on your sense of self as a person since you've had Louis?
Like I say, for years and years, I was at home on my own and I had to self-motivate. And then I ended up looking after Louis a lot. It was a long time before we got him into nursery. And then I take him to nursery and take him home every day. And I just basically, I don't feel like I've got back into the swing of things creatively. And that's, like, my job. So you and I worked together a lot and did, like, what I thought was the best stuff I had done.
And definitely that I had done, yeah.
And that didn't get picked up on TV, even though people kept on saying that it would do, and then it didn't. And so that was a big disappointment. And then...
And that came just... Because that came just before... Or when...
Well, it sort of went on for 5 years.
It did, but like the final no was just before, I think, or around the time Sadie was born. So it would have been almost just before Louis was born, probably.
Right, yeah, so around that time.
Yeah,
right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and then Louis was born.
And sorry, I'm going to compound it. But I think what made that really hard, because it was something that both you and I felt was just like the best we could possibly do, that when that doesn't get made, you think, well, if you don't want that, then what's the point of me making it? I mean, that's ludicrous logic, obviously, but you think, well, what's the point in doing anything else? Because if you don't like that and you don't want that, I don't know what else I can do that you'll like.
Well, there was a little bit of that, yeah, definitely. There's that standard career disappointment, which like you have to just sort of get used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm normally okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I had the whole big thing of having a baby and having the opportunity to be there while Laurie was on maternity. I'm like, well, no, I'm not going to, like, what am I going to go and do? Like, sit in the library and write, like, things that people are going to turn down? No. But then there came a point where he was still not in nursery, and I'd been doing this, and Laurie was back at work, and I was looking after him, and I like just hadn't been creative in a long time. Didn't feel funny anymore, which is kind of like my identity. And then I always look after him on Fridays, and every Friday I get some audition, so it's an absolute ball ache arranging that audition, and I'm not prepared for it.
Yeah.
And you know, I have two children, so we don't really work together.
Yeah.
And all of the best stuff that I do creatively, most of the best stuff that I do is collaborating with other people.
Yeah.
But like that was all...
That was quite easy before, and now it's harder.
That's a lot harder. Yeah. And we're all getting older.
Mm.
And people don't want us as much, so and that sort of, and you can't arrange meeting up with people. None of us are going and doing like sketch nights. I don't know what the fucking sketch nights are. I don't want to do a sketch night, because sketch nights are shit.
They were really fun.
They were really fun. Back and then you meet lots of people, and you're like,
and then you're like, right, I'm done now,
and you don't care. But now it's like, well, if I'm going to go and be like do this stuff, I have to have like something to show for it.
Yes.
Like financially or something. I feel like I have to be some kind of breadwinner, and that's not a pressure that comes from Laurie. It's like,
I think it sounds like what you were going through is what most women go through in that situation. Like genuine, like not being.
Yeah, I think probably.
You know, because I think that, you know, especially when you have a very young child, looking after a young baby is arduous and boring a lot of the time. That feels horrible to say, because obviously you adore your child and it's, you know...
I like him.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a slog. You know, as you say, you're at the very beginning, you are feeding your child every 2 hours. You're waking up regularly in the night. You're never having a stretch of sleep. You know, Anna Crilly, who came on a couple of weeks ago, talked about how she couldn't be creative until almost till he was sleeping through the night, which is about two, I think, you know, and actually she, you know, we were talking about how you sort of couldn't understand how people could, you know, people could be creative sort of as quickly. You know, you hear of people doing Edinburgh shows, you know, when their baby's like 6 weeks old or whatever. But I do think that we're very hard on ourselves, and partly because at the very beginning it's the hardest slog, and the older they get and the sort of easier it gets, then the more you realise, oh, actually I've now got space in my head and my brain to be creative and to do that stuff. And at the same time, this is what I felt anyway, because I definitely had a real kind of a panic about not, and I think that's partly a bit a freelance thing as well, but a panic yeah. about when am I going to get, what am I going to be doing, when am I going to be getting back into it, blah, blah, blah. And then it's sort of what happened sort of almost as they turned like two and one was that, oh, life, their life with them is getting easier. And I'm, the panic is lessening because, A, I feel like I can actually go out and do that audition or that, not that I do that anymore, but like, you know, I could go out and do that voiceover or whatever, because it's less stressful leaving my kids with people because they're much more robust and all that kind of thing. And secondly, I quite like, it's easier being with them. So if I do have an afternoon with them, it's much more, I can do stuff that's more, that I get more out of. That sounds, it's not that I didn't enjoy them as babies, but it's increasingly more fulfilling the older they get. So it, that has calmed down a bit for me anyway.
I feel like in general, I am myself again, in that, like, I can be creative and all of that, but I don't have anyone to do it with most of the time. And that's when I'm best, when I'm working with other people. And I'm, like, getting older and, like, no one really gives a shit anymore. So, I'm, the question is, Sophie, is it over for me?
I feel like it might just be over. Whether this is, like, a really, really long way of saying, should we start working together again?
No, I've crossed you off the list because it doesn't work.
Doesn't get commissioned, mate.
No, it's not. Yeah, fine. Unless I can monetize it, I'm not interested.
What's the best bit of advice you've ever been given?
The best bit of advice was from a neighbour who said to me, it's really hard, but it's not as hard as everyone says it is.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
Which I think is actually good advice.
Yeah.
I think it is hard, but in a different way to everyone describes it.
Yeah.
And you imagine it. Like, yeah. I thought, my image of parenting was, of parenting a baby was just stood holding a screaming baby
yeah.
for hours,
yeah,
panicking
yeah.
about, he won't stop crying. Like, I thought that's what everyone was complaining about, yeah. and like, nappies. But like,
yeah, that's,
nappies are fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, we were lucky in that, like, yeah, he cried, but I could stop him crying.
Yeah.
So,
I remember Louis C.K. said something about that and said, the thing is, you care about, when your kid cries, you're interested, or you want to know why they're, you love them so much, you want to help them. So you don't, it's not like waking up to the sound of a drill outside your window where you kind of immediately get angry and you think, what the fuck is that drill doing out of my window? It's like, no, this is my child who I love more than anything else in the world, and they're crying, so I want to see why.
Louis C.K. Used to take his dick out in front
sure.
of,
he used so to whack it doesn't, in front of ladies,
so it's not legitimate.
And what's the worst bit of advice you've ever been given?
Someone said to me, someone said, don't worry about cot death. Like, really, don't worry about cot death. They'll keep on going on about cot death, but don't worry about cot death.
Did that make you worry about cot death?
Yeah, I was like, well, I wasn't thinking about cot death.
Now I am.
Like, I mean, and like, maybe I should.
Through my questions, what can I ask you? What's next for Fergus Craig?
We're moving to Montreal for a year, genuinely. We are, Laurie has got work in Montreal, so we're gonna go there for a year. which, because he's at an age where that could be quite fun.
Mm.
And not that chaotic. So we're going to do that. And we've worked it out that basically, because there's no jobs for people who can't speak French there, which is me.
Really?
Yeah. Not really, no. It's a French-speaking city.
Right, okay.
And certainly not jobs for people who, like, have my skill set.
Yeah, right, okay.
So there's a pretty strong chance I won't get any work while I'm there. But hopefully, I'm really hoping we can get him into a nursery. And I will just write lots.
That would be quite good.
I was really scared about it, but now I'm really excited about it and sort of see it as like a really big opportunity.
I'm very excited for you.
Thank you. Or should I say merci?
Yeah, you see, you've already screwed it up. Mm. I have an image of you just sitting at a desk with views across, like, a. I think actually now I realise it's views across Lake Geneva, which is not Montreal, but I sort of imagine Montreal as like snow-capped mountains and water. So that's not...
Well, it's a city. Well, they call it a mountain, but it's a hill. They have a big hill.
Yeah, fine.
Which they have a lot of snow.
Right, so I'm almost there.
What I really want to do, and Laurie's like giving it approval, but we'll see what happens when I actually book the fucking trip. What I really want to do... So Canada is so huge.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I want to go to somewhere really remote
now,
for a week or two on my own.
You need to speak to Lily Ames about this.
Yes, I should, yeah.
Wonderful podcaster, radio producer, Lily Ames. I think Alberta is the place, there's the state to go.
Maybe. But I almost like to go somewhere...
definitely.
Right, okay,
just
sure.
Just go there.
Fine.
And shut up, okay?
But I'd almost like to go somewhere like specifically, like not somewhere people go on holiday.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Okay. Well, then just get on a plane and just find some.
Like, just I've looked at, like, they're just very remote towns with a population of 400.
Yeah.
That are, like.
And just get
a plane away from other people.
Yeah.
I like quite the idea, of doing that for a week or two.
That would be my idea of hell.
See, I
but again,
excites
it's not about me.
Like,
yeah, no, that's
yeah, it's not about you, is it?
No.
Like a good place to write, right?
Yeah, great.
Am I like absolute fancy?
But you're going to have no mates in Montreal, so you're so you
exactly. So,
you,
so why?
So
does
you
it...
might as well write in Montreal. Why do you have to get on a plane and go to some forest?
Because I like the like.
Oh,
the,
nature.
No, like the oh. actual like. I like pubs with not many people oh. in them. I like solitary. Places but
right.
with like some people there but not
right. So we've come full circle and started with pubs and
but I don't want to go to a pub there necessarily
sure.
I just
so
I'm talking about the
going,
amount of people
you're going on
my absolute
pub
fantasy
tour.
Is to go on a plane on my own. Have you been on a plane on your own since you had kids?
Yes,
I'd really like to do that.
Right, well I hope you do get to do that with a drink in hand. Get on a plane to find a pub. The pubs. You could write a book about the pubs of Canada, bars of Canada.
Yeah, maybe.
There you go. Right. I think we're good.
So at the end, okay, bye.
Thank you very much to the brilliant Fergus Craig for coming to talk to me. And the frank and interesting conversation that we had, it made me think a lot about how we often assume that that crisis of confidence that you might have with work and creativity in particular is the realm of women, and actually it's not. After I'd spoken to Fergus, I saw another friend later that evening, a male actor, who, when I explained what we'd been talking about, sort of shrugged and said... All my friends, I know, everyone I know goes through that. Not dismissing what Fergus went through, but kind of surprised that I found it interesting. So anyway, bon voyage, Fergus. Enjoy Montreal. And And yeah, if you want to look him up, you can find him on Twitter, at Fergus Craig or at Tips for Actors. He also does a blog. I'm sure all the information is on his Twitter feed. Anyway, I am interviewing a number of people in the next couple of weeks. I don't know who's going to be next. Exciting. But I will see you in a few weeks.